Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Jack.
Yay!
How are you doing, Jack?
I am awake.
That's good. So, hey, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors. Or at least, it used to be. But now, the Lord of Light... Oh, wait, that's probably trademarked. We can't talk about... Is that too? Okay. But now we have the technology to fight the night. And TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. So I can't put, like, a burning heart behind our logo?
No.
Are you sure?
The lawyers will be very upset.
Mm. For all your dark fighting needs, from the TNV PVS-14 Night Vision Goggle to the Maul C1 Plus, or maybe even some Valerian Steel, and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. It doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that I'm sure is just fine, even though he likes to wander off in the dark. Nothing bad ever happens there. TNVC has what you need to find things at night. TNVC now with financing. Own or finance the night. Anyway, we are joined by the tactical professor, Claude Werner. We're going to be talking about standards. So, Claude, how are you doing?
Doing very well, John. Yourself?
Oh, I cannot complain, sir. I am living the dream. thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to come on the show. And we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic that I just read through really quickly before the show. not that I studied for the test the day of the test ever. But for those that don't know who you are, haven't heard your other appearances, can you say who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there?
I am a retired Army officer, former lead instructor at the Elite Rogers Shooting School, and have a significant background also in white-collar business, which gives me a little different perspective on some of what goes on in our industry than a lot of my peers do.
Right, right. And I have to say, and I want to thank you publicly, and I've been waiting until you were on the show to thank you publicly. Thank you very much for the information that you've put out, especially in the past. Oftentimes, when I was first getting into all of this, I thought it was sort of silly. But now that I have matured and learned what I didn't know, I am very, very thankful that you did it, because the older I get and the more I do this, the more I find myself agreeing with you. So thank you very much for your positive influence on me, Claude.
Noel, you're quite welcome. I'm glad to be of service.
Yeah. Jack's just looking at me like that was so...
Thank you for your non-positive influences on me, Claude.
Well, gosh darn it. Anyway.
Or at least my non-standard industry responses and ideas.
Well, you know, I've appreciated those too. I just wasn't going to go there. Anyway, let's talk about standards. So you've recently written, you're up to five parts now or six? Five.
Well, there's five published. I have six and seven I'm getting ready to do in the next few days.
Perfect. So let's talk about this. It is a discussion on standards. So what is that discussion about? What does it look like? And why aren't we talking about it more often inside of the industry?
Well, we don't talk about it much in the industry because standards inherently involve some kind of measurement, which can be either quantitative or qualitative. And frankly, it's not the industry, it's our consumer base that really doesn't want to talk about that too much.
Right.
So like any other product or service, we sell to the market, and since the market so far at least has not recognized the value of that, we don't talk about it that much. So in that sense, I don't really blame the industry, nor do I blame the consumer. What we haven't done is done a good job of educating the buying public about why this is important, and that's why I started this series.
Okay. So why is it important? Let's start there.
Well, I'll go back to an old adage that if you don't know where you're starting from and you don't know where you're going, then any route will get you there, but that doesn't mean you're going to end up in the place where you want to be.
Huh.
And that's how this whole standards discussion really started gelling in my mind, was taking that adage, which was really emphasized to me when I was in Special Forces by our company operations officer, where he said, you've got to know where your starting point is, which obviously most military people will put that in the context of land navigation. But he was a very astute trainer of the unit, and he recognized that we had to have some starting point to understand where we are.
Right.
Well, a starting point implies that you are establishing a baseline. Where are you? And then you decide, well, where do I want to take this? And I'll frame that in the discussion that you and I had on Facebook yesterday about personal performance standards.
Yeah.
And the context of them. Well, some people need to be in a higher place. Some people want to be in a higher place. And conversely, some people simply cannot afford to be in a higher place. And I mean that in the sense of people don't all have access to the facilities and resources that most of us in the industry do. So
right.
they simply can't afford it.
And it seems to me, too, that, and I have this conversation a lot, and I was certainly bad about this, not really having a realistic view on what normal people are able to do or not able to do just from a commitment standpoint seems to be very damaging.
Well, and also think about the progression, because I right now I'm thinking a lot about what I call gun culture 3.0.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about in the industry about gun culture 2.0, but the way I define gun culture 2.0 is people who are newcomers, and I'll call that less than 5 years experience, who actually like guns. They like going out shooting them. They like having them. They like talking about them and so forth. Gun culture 3.0 is actually a much larger market segment, and they're people who recognize the utility of the gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the handgun, especially. They say, well, if things are kind of, my neighborhood's changing, or I've just become more aware of things go on, so I want to have a gun.
Right.
But they're not really into guns.
Yeah.
It's no more important to them than, say, the three-hole puncher that's on my desk. It's an important tool for me when I work, but I really don't care about it. I mean, it works. Makes holes in the paper so I can put things in three-ring binder. But aside from that, I just don't care about it.
Yeah.
And that's gun culture 3.0. So let's say, for instance, how many people would you say that have bought guns or who bought guns during the previous administration, which is the term I like to use,
mm-hmm.
who will ever fire more than one box of ammunition through it?
Very few.
Now, I would put it at 1 in 1,000.
I'm a little more optimistic than you, but very few.
But it's a small percentage.
Yes.
So let's go back to the standards discussion. As you know, I used to teach a 3-hour class, and I'm very glad that my colleague Carl Wren has much more clearly defined this. I had the vague notion of it, but Carl's a very pneumatic numeric person, and so he's
Well, he could be a pneumatic person, too. We really don't know what he does in his spare time.
Well, that's also true. But so for years, I realized that people simply don't have the resources to expend on a lot of training. So I taught this three-hour class that was one evening a week, or once a month, pardon me, that was one evening a month, 3 hours, 50 rounds. Because my observation is gun culture 3.0, after 50 rounds, their performance really starts dropping off, especially in an indoor range.
Let me interrupt because we have to go to break. Right now we're talking with Claude Werner. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scattergun since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Claude Werner, and you were telling us before the break, Claude, how you were teaching a class once a month that was a three-hour, 50-round class, and how that was about the greatest number of rounds that you could get people to shoot before their performance seriously dropped off. And then I had to interrupt you. I apologize.
They would start closing their eyes and flinching and so forth and so on. And over the period of – and I probably taught that class, I don't know, 50 or 60 times. Mm-hmm. So that was a pretty good experience base because I worked the line by myself. So I watched every student. So at any rate, Jeff Cooper many years ago said his idea was he needed to prepare people for the with the idea of they might get into a gunfight on the way home from gun sight.
Right.
Okay. So, and I think that's a good philosophy. So that was a way I thought about it in terms of what can I accomplish with these folks in 3 hours, which was about an hour and a half classroom lecture and interaction and about an hour and a half on the range, about equally divided. So I had to get them, first of all, with the idea of the gun is not a universal tool that people like to think it is, because legally you cannot use it in many cases unless you want to get into a lot of trouble and spend your rest of your life in prison. And then second of all, you have to be able to use it reasonably effectively. And reasonably effectively covers a lot of ground, not only from the standpoint of shooting performance, but especially in that demographic, just being able to handle the gun safely.
Right.
As you know, I'm really big on the concept of how many negative outcomes occur that the industry doesn't talk much about. And that includes people in the particular case of what I was trying to accomplish in that three-hour class was I obviously don't want them to shoot themselves or anybody else in the class.
Right.
And so gun handling is one of those things there's a standard for. And there are actually some states that, although they have a shooting component of their weapons carry licensing format, there is no performance standard for the test other than the person has to demonstrate over the course of 50 rounds for the instructor that they can handle the gun safely. But they could do this shooting into a berm with no target.
Right.
I don't think that is a bad way to look at it. That probably the first thing you need to be able to do if you're a brand new gun purchaser is not shoot yourself or anybody around you.
Yeah.
So that's the beginning of a standard.
Okay.
Then, you know, so that's what my colleague Steve Harris, who writes on modern service weapons, calls the can. Can you do this? Can you physically manipulate the gun in a safe manner? Then another thing that they have to understand as a standard is what they're legally allowed to do. So that was part of my, very briefly, because I'm not a lawyer, but I can tell them what are good, what I think are good ideas and what are not.
Yeah.
So that's another standard. So the takeaway then from that class is I think that having some kind of a performance standard is important. But the performance standard that applies in context, got to use that word.
Thank you.
In context for you and me is radically different than somebody who's only has only fired 50 rounds in their life and may only ever fire 50 rounds in their life.
Right.
So what I ended up using as the performance standard for that was the Los Angeles Police Department Retired Officer's Course, which is to shoot 10 rounds at a silhouette target and hit it at least 7 times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for at that stage of the game, for those people, and I was able to get everybody to pass it. I never had anybody fail.
Yeah.
Some of them I had to work with them a little bit, but everybody passed it. So at that stage of the game for them, have they met a standard?
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, where not only did they meet my standard that I had established for the class, but in their mind, they had then met a standard.
Right.
And there is a confidence aspect of that that people often don't understand the importance of. So that's why standards are important.
It's funny. I was just saying on the phone earlier today that a poor plan executed decisively beats a good plan executed indecisively any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, my very favorite video to illustrate this. There's the video of the Asian-American lady inside of her home, and they've got a bunch of restaurant supplies that are stacked up inside of the home as well. And I want to say it's 3 armed robbers break in. Mm-hmm. She ends up killing 2 of the 3 of them and attacks violently, aggressively, and she's got a high point that she's shooting one-handed. Dominates that encounter handily, wins that encounter with gear and training that many people would find incredibly suboptimal.
Right.
And that's not to say that we, you know, I'm not saying that, well, you don't need to be trained or you don't need to have good gear. I don't know, but it can be done without those things by the right person.
Mm-hmm.
And failing to acknowledge that seems very disingenuous to me.
Well, and then let's think about that in terms of a personal standard of conduct that lady had. And that's another one of the standards that we don't talk about much is your standard of conduct. When we talk about mindset, mindset is a standard.
Yeah.
I will not be violated.
Mm-hmm.
I will not be dominated. I will not have these low-life criminals, you know, take my stuff or harm me or harm my family or whatever. That's just not going to happen. Well, that's another standard.
Right.
And that's a personal standard. So that's why I, in part 3 of the series on my blog, tacticalprofessor.com, I said, who sets the standards?
Right.
Because when I first started this series, I got comments and emails and PMs, so forth, from people where what they were concerned about was that I was going to talk about the standards that were established by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not what I had in mind at all. But I wanted to leave that in people's minds so that they would actually have the reaction that they did. Because the most important standards that we can observe are the ones that we set ourselves. And that lady that you just mentioned is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
She set that standard for herself that she was not going to be violated or dominated by 3 criminals. And if she had to kill 2 of them with a crummy gun that no one in the industry would ever advise her to have, well, that didn't matter to her because her personal standard was, I'm going to use what I got and I'm going to come out of this okay. And I applaud her for that because she had set a personal standard of this is just not going to happen. And I think that's important that people start thinking about their own personal standards, which in some cases are conduct, in her case, and in other cases are, well, what am I capable of doing physically as a performance standard, which is what you were alluding to at the beginning of our conversation.
Right. We got to go to break, so we'll pick this right back up. Right now we're talking with Claude Werner from tacticalprofessor.com. Tacticalprofessor.wordpress.com. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Events. Manufacturer Care, right? Accessories. Daniel Events, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300-lumen sidekick to the 500-lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, "Aziz, light!" ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now, as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 30% off every product at the Surefire.com web store except suppressors and batteries by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS, that is ALLTHELUMENS, at Surefire.com. So we're discussing standards with Claude Werner, the tactical professor, and we were talking about an incident that occurred, and you brought up something that I don't think enough people bring up, how mindset is a standard too. And it reminded me of a quote from one of my very favorite John Wayne movies. I won't be wronged, I won't be insulted, and I won't be laid a hand on. I don't do these things to other people, and I require the same from them. And bonus points if you can name that movie. I know you probably can, Claude, but all the other people.
Well, especially since I cited it in the blog.
Did
yeah,
you actually?
I probably can. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm going to take a shot in the dark. Man Who Shot Liberty Valance?
No, Jack, get out. Well, anyway, those darn youngins, even though Jack's only 2 years younger than me, three?
Two.
Okay. No, wait, I'm 34.
I will be 32 in a month and a half, somewhere around there.
You look really rough for your age, bro.
It's the miles, not the years, man.
Anyway, so what are some other standards, and why do people, I mean, because I was guilty of this as well. You start talking about standards, and I'm like, shooting standards? Let's talk about those. But it's more to it than that.
Well, and I'll go back to the idea of knowing what you're legally allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's I am shocked, and I don't use that word all the time, but in this case, I am shocked at how many people own deadly weapons, firearms, but also knives and whatever deadly weapons, you know, might be in the home, who do not have the slightest idea of what they can legally do with them.
Mm-hmm.
That is frankly shocking to me, because I ask it in almost every class that I teach, have you read the deadly force laws and the use of force laws, which are not synonymous,
mm-hmm.
They're akin but not synonymous, have you read them for your state? And have you read them for the state that you're traveling in? And most people have not, which in the day of the internet is just shocking. You can go online and go, in my case, I can go deadly force law, Georgia,
mm-hmm.
And it will immediately pull up the Georgia code relating to that. So that's another standard of which I talked about in part five, know the rules.
Yeah.
Know the rules. And that's another standard of mine that you really ought, if you're going to have a gun which gives you the power to kill people, you probably ought to know when you can and, more importantly, cannot use that. So that's another standard. When may I do things? And I'll go back to Steve Harris's thing where he has a paradigm, can, may, should, must.
Right.
And most people don't understand where that fits in. Can is a performance standard. Mm-hmm. What can I do? May is the legal standard of what are you allowed to do. And then should and must are basically your own personal standards of mindset of what am I willing to do and what's a good idea and so forth. And every one of those has standards that are either, in the case of can, are largely quantifiable standards.
Right.
Once you get into may, should, and must, then those are more qualifiable standards. May, you're going to be judged by a jury of 12, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's not a numbers game, except in the fact of they either all agree or they don't agree.
Right.
So those are those kind of standards that we need to think about. And I think what I want to do most is to provoke the discussion, because I don't have all the answers to this.
Right.
I cannot provide answers to you because your situation is different than mine. You're married. You have children. That's a very different situation from a guy who's a single dude like me.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to do is just start people thinking about what are performance standards and what are conduct standards and what are legal standards, and just get them thinking about it, because inherently I think that many people, not all people, but many people, if they really think about things, they'll come up with the right answer. But you have to force them, and that's our goal as trainers, I think, if we're doing our jobs right, is to force people to think about what they need to do, not only during a class, but after a class.
Do you think that trainers, and I kind of, we just talked with Steve Fisher about this, but I'd like to get your take. Do you think trainers do a good enough job really identifying the context that their students exist in?
No.
Why is that?
Most trainers come from either a military or a law enforcement background.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, and I am no different than that. Like I said, I'm a retired Army officer. Because of that, training is then always put in the context of the job function.
Right.
That's a very different set of circumstances than when a private citizen comes to Claude or John to take a class, and then they're going to go away
mm-hmm.
and go and live their own lives. Now, when I was training my A team, I knew exactly what the context of that training was going to be like if we had to apply it in combat.
Right.
A police officer who is trained by his police academy, the police academy knows exactly what the police officer has to do once they go out on the street. And that's a background assumption or paradigm or whatever you want to call it. That is perfectly valid in the context of military and law enforcement training. But we, as trainers of private citizens, have to realize that, once again, just as I said, if you, John, came to my class, the context of your life is utterly, or largely, I won't say utterly, but it is largely different than mine because you have a family and
yeah.
I don't. And you live in a more northern climate than I do, so even the clothing that you wear is going to be different than what I would.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that we in the industry need to be a little more cognizant of, is that what we're doing in our classes is not the same kind of cookie cutter training that law enforcement and military agencies can and should use. And there's nothing wrong with that, because they know exactly what the end result is supposed to be. In the private citizen market, we don't know what exactly they should be. We kind of know what the skills and so forth need to be in that entire can, may, should, must paradigm, but we don't necessarily know how they're going to be applied. And I think we need to be doing a little better job at thinking about that and then helping people make those decisions on their own.
Yeah. We have to go to break, and then what I would like to do is share my thoughts on, at least my personal thoughts on that, and Melody mostly shares them, I assume, since we teach the class together. But I'd like to get your response. Okay. But anyway, we're talking with Claude Werner, the tactical professor. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. So we're talking with Claude Werner, and we're talking about standards, and now the conversation has sort of shifted to context. Let me get your thought on this, Claude. We've got a curriculum that we teach, Melody Lauer and I, as part of Citizens Defense Research, that is geared towards private citizens that have kids around. That's at least who we market it to. It's actually more of if you're around people that you don't want to shoot when you need to shoot somebody else, but whatever. Anyway, the thing that I try and keep in mind that I try and impress on students that I have is, number one, that they are capable of making a mistake, and those mistakes are oftentimes incredibly tragic when other family members are present. So it stems completely from your negative outcomes. And once again, thank you for introducing me to that concept. It seems like to me that quite a few people, when they think of self-defense, have this very positive viewpoint on, you know, I've got this gun and I get to be the hero with the gun. And they never consider what they can do that will mess things up. Do you think that more training should focus on that, or is that too macabre?
No, I think training needs to focus on that, and it may not be training per se, because I distinguish training from education.
Okay.
For instance, what I'm doing on my blog is not training, it's education.
Correct.
What we're doing on this program today is education.
Yep.
When you have your students, or I have my students on the range, then we're training them. We're physically capable of seeing what they're doing and helping them correct or presenting a set of circumstances for them to solve or whatever.
Right.
So I think that we need to have more of an educational effort in the industry about the idea exactly of what you've talked about of what are the negative outcomes. That's one reason why I do not use the term self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
I use the term personal protection.
Okay.
Because the term person may not refer to the individual that's doing the protecting.
Okay.
Rather, it may pertain to that person's family or just people around them. You get in an active, let's say if a person, and there have been some active shooter situations that have been solved by private citizens with firearms, but the person they were protecting was not themselves. They
right.
were protecting, you know, the high school principal in Arkansas years ago. Well, he was protecting his school.
Yeah.
So that was his mission, and he was protecting a different set of persons.
Well,
so I think that we need to educate people more about that and let them know that there's more people involved in this than just you.
Well, it seems like, too, that is, and I had this conversation with folks all the time, especially about our class. You know, I know getting involved in other people's situations are generally not a good idea, but I also don't know anyone that I am friends with that if they were at a mall and the mother that was standing next to them took a round of the face and their kid was just on the ground, that they're not going to be responsible for that kid, at least in that situation.
Yes, I think that all of us would feel an obligation to do that and be a decent person.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between being a hero and being a decent person.
Right.
You know, when people want to be a hero, they're kind of setting themselves up for having an issue.
Yeah.
But being a decent person, I think, is always a good idea.
Yeah. So let's try, because we're in the last segment. I know we're going to run out of time. So what's probably going to end up happening is a month from now, I'm going to call you up and be like, hey, let's finish this conversation about standards. But what else is there to consider for the private citizen and how they should approach this?
Well, I'll tell you what my personal peeve is when I go to the range, and you've observed this too if you've ever gone to an indoor range, which I assume you have.
Yes.
That you'll see targets that look like a piece of Swiss cheese, and they've been, you know, they look like someone unloaded them on them with a shotgun at distance with buckshot, but in fact, somebody was shooting at them with a pistol. So, what I would like people to think about, and if there's one takeaway of this from a performance standard idea, is know where your shots are going every single round on the range.
Yes.
And what that means is you bring along a roll of masking tape and you tape all the holes in the target every six shots or so. So that way, when you expend a box of ammo, the result is not this thing that looks like a piece of Swiss cheese, but you actually have some idea of where your rounds are going, and then maybe how do you improve that? So that's establishing a baseline. So that's something that I think people, if they had it in their mind, that I'm going to actually know what I can do with this firearm that I have, maybe I can then apply that and get better at it. And that's the beginning of a performance standard.
And the nice thing about that, too, is that once you reach a certain level, what you start doing is only negatively taping, which is so many of your rounds are going to where you're supposed to be hitting that you only tape the few misses that you get when that occurs. But that's down the road. Do you think that people will shoot at too large of a target?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I personally like the standard that's in the NRA marksmanship qualification program for defensive pistol, and that's to be able to hit a 12-inch circle at 7 yards. I think that's probably a good performance 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Therein lies our thing, and I think Carl was the one who talked about this, who said, yeah, 70% standard. That means one bullet out of three goes flying out somewhere in the community. Nah, that's not a particularly good situation.
Right.
So, yeah, the targets are good. It's okay to start out on a big target, but people need to get the idea of shrinking that down pretty early in the game.
What I've had a lot of success with, maybe it's just the people that I've got. So the people that I teach are incredibly motivated. So I'm fully aware of that the students that I get are not the average student. But, you know, I start them out on 2-inch circles at 3 yards or maybe 2 yards, depending. And I've had people that at the start of the class are not able to hit the backer reliably that are then able to go on and pass not only the FBI qualification at above 80% or at 80% for a passing score, but also our modification of the FBI qualification that is arguably more difficult. And it strikes me that as an instructor too, that there's a very fine line between holding the students to a high standard versus setting a realistic standard. Do you think that is difficult as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And the way I try to resolve that is I tell my students, I use a target that has a series of 8-inch circles on it with a 1.5-inch or so spot, orange spot in the center of the circle.
Right.
And what I tell them is your point of aim is that orange spot, but anything that hits in the 8-inch circle is an acceptable hit.
And that seems like a really, I should take a lesson from you, but I'm sorry to interrupt. We are actually out of time.
Okay.
So I'm sure we will continue this at some point. Claude, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. If people want to read more, where can they do that at real quick?
They can do tacticalprofessoronword.com.
Okay.
That's actually an adequate URL to get to my blog.
My apologies. So.
No worries. The inserting WordPress will also do it, but they can just go to tacticalprofessor.com, and that will take them to my blog.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Claude. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, sir. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, John. You too.
All righty. Hey, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And, hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.